Hello, friends. Welcome. Welcome, Lou.
How are we doing today?
Well, I'm very happy for you. Friends, please join me in congratulating Lou because he's doing this from his own newer studio.
That yeah. Personal studio now. So
personal studio. So congratulations.
Work on my own. Thank you.
Lou has been a steady anchor and pillar for these episodes for the last 210 episodes so far, and I couldn't have done it without him. I mean it. Lou.
More than welcome. I've been rewarded many times. This has been such an amazing journey. It's a great study, and I'm just enjoying it. We have a huge community, 60-plus nations involved. It's been a great thing to be a part of. It's a great thing to experience.
So today, friends, we're going to be doing chapter 18, last few verses we have in the next few episodes. Today, we're going to be doing verse 54 and 55. And without further ado, let's start with verse 54, which says, once he becomes Brahman and he is serenely in his self, he no longer grieves, nor is he sad. He has no desires. He is the same to all beings. He gains supreme devotion to me. So as we always do, let's try and piece out everything that this means. This verse 54 and 55 are speaking of the path of devotion or bhakti yoga to get to Brahman. Remember, we said that there are three ways in which you can get to God. One is the karma yoga, meaning you just do service for God by helping others, by doing your duty, by doing your karma. And if you do it selflessly and you devote everything that you do, your karma, for God, then that's one way to get to God, karma yoga. Mm-hmm. Another way is jnana yoga, which is the path of knowledge. What you're doing right now, you're gaining knowledge, you're gaining jnana. And by doing that, you get to God because you're gaining this knowledge. So up to now, these verses that we've talked about has been the way to get to Brahman by jnana yoga and karma yoga. Verse 54 and 55, which we're going to be doing in this episode, is the bhakti yoga, the path by devotion. Bhakti is devotion to God, prayer, etc. So he said, once he becomes Brahman, so let's tease out this. Becomes, what does that mean? Be Brahman, what does that mean? Brahma itself means large, huge, big, infinite. So Brahman, one of the reasons why God is called Brahman is because he's infinite. He's huge, he's God, he's big. Then he says he becomes Brahman. Let's understand what that means. When I say, I am conscious of something, it means that I am conscious of this screen that I'm looking at. Mm-hmm. But I am not consciousness. My consciousness makes me aware of this screen, right? Now, I could say I become consciousness, which means I am the consciousness that then becomes aware of the screen. Or he says, I become Brahman, means if you say I am happy or happiness is you, then if instead of saying I am happy, I am happiness is what he's saying. So when you become Brahman, you are everything. You are consciousness, your happiness, your whatever you think God is, that is you. You become happiness, not I am happy. So you are happy when you are Brahman, even though you may have given up everything, you may have sacrificed everything, but you can't say, well, you know, now when I sacrificed everything and I was turning towards God, I had both the use of my limbs, my upper arms, my legs, I had money, I had security, I had a family, but now I'm miserable. No. When you give it up, you should be prepared to say, when I give it up, I know I will have nothing. And I will still be happy. I will not be unhappy. So you will be happy if you're lame, if you're old, if you're weak, if you have no money, if you have no security, and you're still comfortable or uncomfortable. You are ready for it when you give it up. You have no regrets about it. There's no sense of deficiency in a person who becomes Brahman. He is serenely in his self. He no longer grieves, nor is he sad. He has no desires. He has no cravings, it says, no grief, no desires, no dukkha. He is God. Just like we say, he is consciousness, he is happiness, he is God. God is you. We've often said about Buddha or Krishna or Jesus that he is God. He may walk around in the form of a body and speak like a person and have likes and dislikes, because Krishna liked the flute. Jesus might have liked a glass of wine or company of certain people, but he is still God. He was born, all of these people, Buddha, Siddhartha, Jesus, Krishna, were born as human beings like you and I, but by becoming self-realized, they became God. They're just using the same body as they were born into to speak. So then it says he is the same to all beings. So he recognizes God in every living creature, whether it be an insect or a bird or an animal or a human being. He recognizes that they're all just like him, God. And so he is the same. He has no hatred for anybody, no love for anybody. He says, I alone am God. I become God like a river joining the ocean. Then you can't tell except for the initial delta where the river and the ocean is muddied together. After that, the river and the ocean are one. So a person who becomes Brahman by this devotion, he is God. He no longer thinks of the past and gets sad about it. There's no feeling of sorrow. He no longer craves for enjoyment in the future. He doesn't think, oh, in the future, if I get this, this will happen, I'm happy. He loves all beings. Then devotion to God doesn't mean being attached to a deity. You know, you may see behind me statues of Ganesh. And, you know, people who are brought up praying to Ganesh or Shiva or Vishnu or Lakshmi, you know, they have a particular deity and they are fervently believers in that deity. Here, when he says devotion to God, he doesn't mean devotion to one particular deity. He said instead, devotion means being attuned to Brahman, fixated on Brahman, recognizing Brahman, feeling one with all beings. Like a musician, you know, when musicians in classical music, Indian classical music anyway, I don't know about Western music, Lou, you can help me here. Mm-hmm. But in Indian music, it starts off with one person playing something, almost like giving you a beat, a rhythm. This is a, you know, like a metronome, is that what it's called?
Sure, yeah.
And the musician playing the classical instrument always has one part of his brain attuned to that beat, that rhythm that's going on. And then he keeps playing his instrument. But he's always, at one part of his mind is always on that beat that's going on. What's the equivalent in Western music?
Well, with bands and groups, they'll give a count. And of course, there's a drummer, and that drummer keeps the beat for you. And that's what paces everybody.
Okay, so here, what he's saying is like an actor on a stage. You know, the actor is aware that there's a stage in front of him, there's these people, and he's supposed to act like, you know, whatever his role is, he's a king or whatever. But inside him, he knows, one part of him knows that he's Mr. XYZ acting as the king, and he's supposed to say his lines, and he's supposed to pretend to be a king, etc. But inside, one part of him knows that this is the real, he is not the actor. So similarly, while you are acting, he says, have one part of your brain fixated on Brahman and another part go about your regular duties. Somebody used the example you know what a heat-seeking missile is? When you shoot a rocket as it's going towards the plane, if the plane is going doing somersaults or whatever, the bomb will just keep following it because it's following the heat in the airplane. Similarly, this person who used this metaphor said, make sure that you focus on Brahman like a heat-seeking missile. Not an example that I like, but a heat-seeking missile. So then there are four types of bhaktis. One The first type of bhakti in Sanskrit is known as artha. Artha means when I'm in trouble, I say, God, please, you know, I'm in trouble. Please help me. My boss says he's going to fire me tomorrow if I don't do this, this, this. He woke up in a bad mood, God. He must have had a fight with his wife. And yes, I made a mistake with whatever, but tomorrow is my last chance. If I go in there and everything's fine, he woke up on the right side of the bed, he's not going to fire me. I hope my work is good. Please, God, please help me. That is artha, that you lean towards God and you pray, you show this devotion and bhakti when you are in trouble. That is right. The artha. Were you saying something, Lou?
No, that's when you're invoking God for personal gain.
Correct.
Yeah.
The second one was also for personal gain, but it could also be, and that is in Sanskrit known as arthartha. Arthartha is combination of artha, where he's in trouble, but it also includes when he says, I'm not in trouble, but I want God, my daughter, to be married. This wedding should go successfully. Please, God, please let everything go well. Or I'm about to get a promotion and there's two other people in consideration. Please, God, let it be me. He's not in trouble per se, but he wants something from God. That's the arthartha. The third is a jignyasu. A jignyasu is somebody who's curious, who wants to learn about the Gita, Hinduism, religion, out of curiosity. He says, I've checked into this religion, that religion. Now I want to know about this religion. Just teach me. It's fascinating to me. That's a jignyasu. Nothing wrong with it, but it's not the true devotion. And the last one in Sanskrit is called jnani or bhakta. And that pure jnani or bhakta is what we were talking about. Pure devotion for the sake of getting close to God, for loving God, for being one with God, and that's a jnani or a bhakta. That's verse 55. Let's move on to verse 56. No, sorry, that was verse 54. Verse 55. Mm-hmm. With bhakti devotion, a person knows Brahman. We talked about what Brahman means. Let's see what knows means. With bhakti devotion, a person knows Brahman. He knows what Brahman is, and who Brahman is, then knowing Brahman, he enters into that. So devotion, bhakti, is the same as love. And when you love your little grandchild, when you're looking the same emotion going downwards towards like a grandchild or a son or a daughter, that's known as love. But that going upwards towards a higher entity can also be love, but it's usually called devotion.
Right.
Devotion is the same as love. When a mother, so here comes the concept of knowing. When a mother knows a child, a baby, the child is crying because his diaper's wet or he's hungry. The mother, loving the child as much as she loves him, maybe a brand new mother in the first month, 2 months, 6 months, maybe doesn't know all the reasons why the child is crying. But because of her love, she's in tune. She's fast asleep, but one part of her mind is constantly on the child crying or whatever. And when the child cries, somehow she knows that this child is crying because he's in pain or he's hungry or his diaper's wet or he just needs to be cuddled. Whatever it is, she knows. Here he's saying, when you know Brahman, you know every aspect of Brahman. You know Brahman's personification through an insect, through a bee, through a mouse, through an elephant, through a human being. You know Brahman because you love him, you're devoted to him. The other concept of a person knowing Brahman means what? A person understands something about Brahman. So this is a good example that I thought of when saying, how do I explain this? My 2-year-old or 3-year-old grandson, he's now 9 years old. And I hope at some point in the future, when I'm no longer here and he's in his 20s or 30s, you know, he comes to these podcasts and he listens to them and he remembers this story because we tell this whenever we're all families are together, all my sons and my grandchildren. So we've been saying for a long time, we're going on a family vacation, all of us, like 12 of us, we're going together. And we're talking about vacation, vacation, vacation. We're going on a vacation. We're going on a vacation. He heard that word, ki. He heard that word a million times, vacation. As a two-year-old or three-year-old, he did not know what vacation meant, right? So all along, when we're going to, got in a limo to go to the airport, he says, is this vacation? And we said, yeah, we're going on vacation. Got to the airport. He says, is this vacation? He said, yeah, this is vacation. He was asking, is this airport the vacation?
Right.
He was asking, is this limo known as vacation? We got to, I think we were going to the Bahamas, Caribbean. She said, is this vacation? We said, yeah, this is vacation. We're on vacation. So then he pointed to the ocean. I remember specifically, we were driving. There's a blue ocean on the side. We're all saying, look at that ocean. Look at the color of the water. And he looks out. He says, that's vacation? Then we understood when he pointed to the ocean and he said, is that vacation? We said, no. Vacation means, and we told him what vacation meant.
Right.
Not the sea, not the airport, not the car, the concept of us, etc. That's when it stuck in his mind that that's what vacation meant.
Right.
Okay. When that thought came, now I understand that this whole thing, this experience is known as vacation, not this ocean, not the limo, not the airport, not this house or hotel where we're staying. When that understanding comes, all other misunderstandings go away. So he could have said vacation a million times.
Right.
But if he doesn't really understand it, it makes no sense. A person who you say, this is a pot, can say pot all the time, but he wouldn't understand when he says, oh, this thing, this round thing, brown looking, made of clay, is a pot. Okay, now I understand it. A snake and a rope, you see it as a snake in the twilight where it's dark. You see that it's a snake, but it's really a rope. You keep thinking of it as a snake. When you finally see it as a rope and you say, oh, it's a rope, no longer will you go back. So
Right. Similarly,
when you finally get it, when you know Brahman, then nothing can shake your no. So what was that? What did it say? When with devotee, with bhakti, devotion, a person knows Brahman, he then knows what Brahman is and who Brahman is. Then knowing Brahman, he enters into that. Enters into what? Enters into what? What does enter mean? Enter means, so you've got the concept of Brahman, you think about it, you contemplate, you absorb it, then you know what Brahman is. Once you know it, just like the mother who wakes up with the child crying, once you know it, then you say, okay, now I know what Brahman is, and you understand Brahman. After knowing, he enters Brahman. What does that mean? Enters Brahman after knowing suggests that some doors open, and you say, oh, this is Brahman, and you enter it. No. Recognize that we say, oh, I'm so hungry. Once I eat this big meal, I won't be hungry anymore. I will enter the non-hungry state. However, as you're eating, after the first few bites, your hunger starts to dissipate. When did your hunger actually dissipate? When your plate was completely empty and clean? No. Did you enter the non-hungry state, the fullness, after your meal was over? No. Throughout the process of eating that meal, with the first bite, second bite, third bite, you started to feel a sense that I'm not hungry, as hungry as I was, less hungry. That's what happens with devotion and jnana, or knowledge, and karma. As you're doing it, as you're getting this knowledge, the lack of knowledge of Brahman starts to go away. There's parts of you that change as you get this knowledge, just like with the food and hunger. It happens simultaneously. So as you're getting this knowledge, there is a part of you that is going towards self-realization from 0 to 0.1, to 0.2, to 0.3 as you're doing this. Is there moksha after you get it? No. You're getting a similar small little piece of moksha as you're getting this knowledge, as you're getting this devotion, as you're doing karma. Devotion to the Lord develops an understanding of the self. That's basically what this is saying. He enters, he becomes one with. Once he enters, once this complete knowledge is there. Once you have the complete karma, devotion, jnana, bhakti, and devotion, then you become one with Brahman. You are no longer separate. You're no longer the snake that you see over there. You become the rope. You think of it as the rope. You are the river that has now become the ocean. You cannot enter Brahman and then return back to your individuality. Keep that in mind. You can no longer say, well, now I'm Brahman, but now I'm back to my usual self. Now I'm going to go enjoy myself a nice big cold glass of milkshake or whatever. Once the river enters the ocean, it can never come back to being the river. This is the highest and ultimate goal of the Gita and the Upanishads, to become one with Brahman. One last thing, and then we'll stop for this episode. Often people have asked, so which way is the best? Should I go with karma yoga? Should I go with jnana yoga? Or should I go with bhakti yoga? People argue that which is the best. I have personally switched from one to the other a couple times. And I think that the majority of people recognize that if you have devotion, if you pray, and you really believe in God and Brahman and everything that we're learning now, but you have to have some amount of jnana for you to understand this. Although there are people who just have no jnana at all, but they just become so devoted to God that they become self-realized. It's a lot easier when you have devotion, even if you have no jnana. But there's many, many people who have a lot of jnana, and I've known these people. They have a lot of knowledge about all of these scriptures, what they do. They can cite it verse to verse, but they're not realized at all. They're not devoted, and they're just like philosophers. They just speak up, and they don't have any devotion. So personally, this is my personal opinion, that devotion has to be there, and it is one excellent way to get to Brahman. If you're devoted, I have heard in India of many people who are very, very devoted, may not know a word of the scriptures, but just prayed, and reached God and self-realization. So friends, thank you for listening.
Is it fair to talk about this in terms of the difference between knowledge with a lowercase k and knowledge with an uppercase K? Because you can read the scriptures, you can do these studies, and as you said, not necessarily be tuned into it quite as much as having to experience it through one of these methods and turning it into real knowledge. It's one thing to read the scriptures. It's another thing to understand them.
Yeah. So the same thing that you're saying, Lou, applies to truth, because you can know what the truth is, and you can know what the truth is with a capital T, right?
Right.
So that's in Sanskrit, it's known as the Bodhi, or that's where the word Buddha comes from, Bodhin, that this is the knowledge of something versus the real, with a capital K, knowledge.
Right.
The jnana versus the vijnana. Vijnana is wisdom. And what you're saying applies in Sanskrit to vijnana and jnana. So jnana is one thing, but vijnana is when you take that knowledge and you apply it to everyday experiences, becomes truly yours, not just something that you're reading in a book. And that's vijnana. Knowledge with a capital K, as you say. Yes, you're right.
And we've seen this throughout this whole process with these podcasts, is that we go over concepts again and again and again, and we're at different places when we hear it the second time or the third time, and we have more of that capital K knowledge at that point and can apply it a little better.
And I have to tell you that as I've been doing this podcast, it's sinking in more and more, because I can read it over and over again. It's one thing. But when I say I've got to explain this in such a way that people understand it, and I try, what examples can I use? What examples might I have heard in the past? And different examples come to me, and I start to, and people ask questions, or you bring up something and I have to expand on it. It makes my knowledge that much closer to a knowledge with a capital K. So you're right. You know, my wife and I were talking the other day, and she said, how would you feel? You'd be coming back to life at some point in the future, and your grandson might be your grandchildren. I have a few of them now, thank goodness, will be older. And at some point, They may be listening to this podcast without even knowing that it's their grandfather who did this, and listening to it and saying, wow, you know, I wish I knew the person who spoke this or whatever. Yeah. And here I am with them at this stage. She says, even you might be born at some time in the future and listen to this podcast. And say, I wonder who wrote this. That was fun.
Maybe, but yeah. But see, this is going to be a lasting piece available. I know one of your main things is having this available for your grandchildren and for people to find their way to Brahman through this knowledge. And
right, right.
You know, that's one of the important things in life, just understanding this is what you experience when you have kids, right? Because as you see life the second time, yeah, as you're trying to explain it to your kids,
right,
you understand more. It's like going through it again.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, thank you, Lou. And thank you, friends, for listening. And we'll see you in the next episode.